Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it. It's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line? Now 20% lower. Family plans? Also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number, not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
Welcome to The Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of The Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by RotoBaller. This is episode 371. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80 grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. It feels a little weird to not be doing a Dynasty and Prospect Ranking series here, Chris, but we got another fun episode in store for everyone today.
Yeah, sometimes you got to mix it up a bit. You know, we're still going to talk prospects, so I think that's worth noting out the gate. We would still be talking prospects just from a redraft standpoint. So, yeah, it's going to be a good show.
No, we're gonna break down the Luka Doncic to the Lakers trade. That's what we're doing today. No, it's none of that, which was... I was just about to fall asleep when that news came through, though. It was like, oh, guess I might be up for another hour dissecting all of this. But hey, maybe that triggered a baseball hot stove to get a little more active here. We got the Jack Flaherty finally signing for less than Luis Severino, which is weird. Still waiting on Alonso and Bregman, but maybe those are the next two dominoes to fall. But as Chris said, we are talking prospects today. Some redraft prospects, you know, who you should be targeting, who you shouldn't be targeting, when these guys might be out, you know, what leagues, you know, you should be targeting them in or not targeting them in. A lot of good stuff here. It's obviously so many names to talk about. We're splitting this up into two episodes. We'll go through all the American League teams today and hit National League teams in our episode on Friday, so we can actually have some time to dive into these teams and everything that goes with it. So two episodes on this. But before we get into all of that, you can find us on Twitter. Chris is at Chris Clegg, MILB. I am at Eric Cross, MLB. Show is at Toolshed Pod. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and review. Make sure you check out both of our personal platforms, thedynasty.go.com and toolshedfantasy.com, for more work from each of us. And make sure you check out all the great content available with RotoBaller's MLB Premium Pass. RotoBaller's VIP Draft Kit comes with exclusive rankings and ATC projections from Nick Mariano and Ariel Cohen. It also includes plenty of content from Chris and I. Sync your leagues with TeamSync to use our live draft assistant and get customized expert advice for your league's specific settings. Our Premium Pass comes with 100% money-back guarantee. Go to rotoballer.com/radio and use the code TOOLSHED for 10% off. All right, Chris, let's hop right into it. Let's go alphabetically through all the teams here. And, of course, the Athletics are now the first team on the roster resource alphabetically for the American League. But they got some, you know, they got a few players. They brought up, you know, Lawrence Butler last year. That worked out very well in the second half. You know, it looks like, you know, you get one player right off the bat in the opening day lineup. It's going to be Jacob Wilson after getting a cup of coffee last year. And then we also could get, or we're going to get at some point, Colby Thomas, maybe some Denzel Clark, maybe Nick Kurtz. I'm not like 100% sure on that one, but let's start with Jacob Wilson. Obviously not the sexiest profile here, but what type of league would you be looking to, if any, target Jacob Olsen in?
Yeah, I mean, he certainly plays better in a points league than a roto league, just given that he's going to make a lot of contact. He's going to get on base. Yeah, I think Jacob Olsen's going to play from the get-go. He's going to be the team's shortstop. And, yeah, I mean, if he does not go back down to the minors, and he could go back down the minors and still hit, but he would be, I think, the only career minor league with a 400 batting average, which is crazy, like over a substantial like time. He's like 401. So, yeah, Wilson's going to hit. The power is a little bit questionable, and he's not going to run a ton. So, like, it's not a super interesting profile. It's kind of Luis Arraez-esque, but he's really aggressive. And I know Arraez is aggressive, too, like with Chase and stuff like that. But, you know, Wilson is, I don't know, likes to give you 8 home runs, maybe. I wouldn't count on that. But, like, there is some intrigue with the profile, just given how good the hit tool is and how much he can improve your batting average. You know, I think that that's the kind of stabilizer that can really help you out, even if, you know, you don't get much else from the profile. But you have to balance, that's the thing, you have to balance out your team, and he's like kind of a team-specific build type player, unless it's a points league where it doesn't matter, and then all that just gets thrown out the window.
Yeah, like points league is really the only place I'd really consider him because, you know, like you said, there's not anything else in the profile. I mean, look at ATC projections on him. 6 home runs, 57 runs, 46 RBI, and 5 steals. He had 282 average. He could easily hit 300. I mean, he had contact rate above 90%. It doesn't strike out, like, ever. So it's you could easily see, like, a 300 average and a solid OBP. But, I mean, I hate just getting, like, these one-trick ponies. I mean, it's almost like, you know, getting, like, a Jerrod Dyson back in the day. Like, oh, it gives you speed, but nothing else. So, yeah, I'm not really interested in Wilson at all. Points format, I could totally see it. He definitely has more value there. But outside of that, not really intrigued by him. I mean, we get the two outfielders here, you know, Colby Thomas, Denzel Clark. Thomas being, you know, obviously a little bit closer, probably gets the first call up. I know you're a little bit lower on Thomas than I am. So would you be looking, you know, what do you think we get from Thomas Clark this year before we get into Nick Kurtz?
Yeah, that'll be interesting for sure. I don't know because there's not a clear spot in that outfield. I mean, surprisingly, like that's become a strength of the team, and that lineup actually as a whole with the Athletics is pretty good all of a sudden.
Yeah.
So I know statistically, like you look at the profile with Colby Thomas and it's like, okay, like this is the guy, like he's ready. He put up absurd numbers, but under the hood, there's a little more concern for me. Despite him hitting 31 homers, having 80 extra base hits, his power numbers were really good. But you know, you look and against off-speed pitches, like he had a contact rate against breaking balls just above 60%. And against 94 plus, it was 63% contact. I don't know. Like I'm a little bit concerned. Like there's a hole at the top of the swing against good fastballs with Thomas. Now the skill set's fun. Like he's got power, he's got speed, but is he going to make enough contact out of the gate to be worthwhile in a redraft league? I don't know. On the flip side, Clark is a really good defensive outfielder. Like, he really impressed me in center field in the AFL when we saw him. His range, his reads, his jumps. I mean, he just did it all and made plays look easy out there. And while Denzel Clark has also had his concerns of contacts, we saw steady improvement all year with Clark. Difference is Clark has not made it out of Double-A yet. We've seen Thomas in AAA for a large portion of the year, and both have contact concerns. So, you know, I think it will be interesting. Do the contact gains stick? Because you look month to month with Clark, it was 59% contact in April with a 45% K rate, 62.9% contact in May with a 36% K rate, 68.2% contact with a 25.9% K rate in June, July, 74.2% contact, 24% K. Then August, September, 74.4 and 24.2. So pretty notable improvements for Clark. Again, I don't know if they stick. It's a good approach, though. Like, I really like the approach with Clark. He's not chasing all that often. He's going to get on base, and he's going to run. So with these guys, I don't know. I struggle with both of how they fit in the picture in 2025, but I do feel better about Denzel Clark, just given his glove being really good in the outfield.
Yeah, no, definitely a better glove there with Clark. I mean, I wonder, you know, with Thomas, he may be probably more of like a 240, 250 hitter or something like that. But I do think there's, you know, going to be some solid power speed there. I mean, over full season, I can see like low 20s home runs, double-digit steals, something like that. Just got to wonder, well, yeah, like you said, when does he fit in? I mean, I think the path would be, you know, if Soderstrom doesn't hit and they move, you know, Seth Brown from a corner outfield spot to first base, I think that could open up. I think Lede was solid enough last year. Obviously, Butler broke out. So I think the Seth Brown going the first base route is probably the best case scenario there for Thomas. I think he's probably up first. I think Clark's more of a midseason call up, but definitely one to keep an eye on, more of like a, you know, keep an eye on him for when he comes up for like FAB or waiver wire purposes. And lastly, you know, Nick Kurtz, I know people want to see him up. I know he's super advanced and probably could, but I don't really see them pushing him a ton. Like, I don't see him, like, the point in them bringing him up in like May or June. I think he absolutely debuts like later in the year. It could be a waiver wire target like August, September, but I just don't see him up for late season. What do you think?
Yeah, I kind of wonder if he follows the Jacob Wilson path from last year.
Yeah.
So they drafted Wilson, you know, first round in 2023, and looking at the specific date that they brought, it was June, if I'm not mistaken, maybe early July, but I was going to pull up the game log to confirm his call-up date. Yeah, it was in June, or July, excuse me, right after the All-Star break, July 19th, and obviously he got hurt in the first game. So I think that's a realistic path for Kurtz. Also, like, if the team somehow finds themselves in contention, which I know you may laugh hearing that, but that team in the second half was actually really good in 2024.
Yeah, they were.
So if they're in contention, maybe they bring up Kurt sooner. The biggest thing for him is just going to be staying healthy all year. We have not seen him stay healthy at all. You know, the skill set's there, the power's there, the field hits there, the OBP skills are there. Everything you want to see with Nick Kurtz is there. It's just more the fact that he's got to stay on the field a whole season. So, you know, I kind of think he starts in double A, maybe he's there a month, goes to triple A, and then we're probably looking at a late June, early July call up for Kurtz, I would guess.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see around the All-Star break. I think people think, like, where he's getting drafted, I feel like people think he's going to be up in like May or something like that. I just don't see it as whatsoever. But obviously, when he's up, I mean, he could provide, you know, top 15 value at the first base spot right away, given his blend of contact, approach, and power. Absolutely. All right, next up here, the Baltimore Orioles. I mean, obviously a ton of talent there in Baltimore, both, you know, veteran and young talent, but that creates a bit of a headache for us in the fantasy baseball world. I mean, last year we saw Kobe Mayo struggle to get into the lineup. We saw Heston Kjerstad struggle to get into the lineup. Both are, you know, really good bats. And this year it looks like they're on the outside looking in, at least to start the season, because, you know, assuming there's no injuries, you know, in spring training for opening day, it's a pretty, you know, filled, you know, lineup here. You got to assume that, you know, it looks like Jackson Holliday should get another crack, which, you know, absolutely should. So if he's at second base to start the year, that pushes Westberg over to third. So kind of where do you put Kobe Mayo? I mean, unless they trade Ryan Mountcastle, you know, Mountcastle's been, you know, solid. Ryan O'Hearn in that, you know, strong side platoon DH role has been pretty solid too. So I don't think those guys are, you know, going to lose their spots anytime soon. But I think the path for, at least for Mayo, is, you know, Holliday struggling, Westbrook moving back over, or a Mountcastle trade, which I think I heard some rumblings about Mountcastle trade, but I don't think any of them obviously didn't materialize. But with Kjerstad, it's almost like you need an injury to, I mean, Mullins has missed some time in the last few years, so I could see, you know, an injury there, opening up a spot in the outfield. I think he's waiting for an injury, really, for Kjerstad. But I think once Kjerstad and Mayo, if they get that shot, definitely fantasy viable. I know, Chris, you mentioned it, you know, not wanting to draft Kobe Mayo this year, and like you're saying, like 12, 15 team league. I'm 100% there with you, and that's not a knock on the talent whatsoever. I mean, Mayo could be a middle of the order master for years to come, but when does he get that shot this year? And that doesn't even, like, you know, those are just the guys that are already, you know, already have debuted and are right on the cusp, but there's, like, you know, a few more. Like, when do we see Samuel Basayo, you know, where does he fit into this mix too? It's like a lot of, you know, what ifs when and when do we see these guys? And after seeing what happened last year, I mean, I love these guys. Like, I love Mayo, Bisayo, Kierstead. I like a good bit too. It's just, I don't know if I can trust them to get the time this year, Chris. So I don't know. What are your thoughts?
I'm right there with you. It's I'm not sure I'd touch any of the Orioles prospects for a redraft. It could change really quick, so that's worth noting that trade could change Mayo's outlook very fast.
Yep.
I think that when we look at Heston Kjerstad, I'm kind of thinking it's a bench/platoon role right now, unfortunately. And then with Bisayo, like, you can pretty much write off 2025 for him being in the majors. I think that there's still some things he needs to work on with the approach. He's still very young. Yes, he reached AAA last year, but that also showed some warts in the game where he's going to be working on those. I think best case for Bisayo is like a early September call-up, cup of coffee.
Yep.
I think Mayo's best case right now, as the roster stands, is like 150 plate appearances. So Kjerstad, maybe a little bit more wild card. He probably plays a little bit more. But honestly, I'm just not touching any of them. That being said, like I said, it could change really, really quick. So tomorrow, trade could happen, and boom, Mayo's got a spot. Long term, still very much in on Kobe Mayo. I love the profile. The power's legit. The field of hit solid. It's improved, and I believe in it. So, yeah, I'm definitely in on Mayo in a dynasty, but redraft, yeah, I'm not interested.
Yeah, no, 100%. I think now's actually a good buying opportunity. I think the perceived value has come down a little bit on Mayo because, you know, he didn't, you know, mash coming out of the gate when there's a little cup of coffee. It wasn't even a cup of coffee. It was like a shot of coffee.
40 plate appearances.
Yeah, it was like a thimble of coffee. It was nothing. So it's like this whole, like, what have you done with me lately thing? Oh, he didn't excel right off the bat. He must not be as good as we thought. That's complete crock of crap. Like, this is a very, very good bat. And yet, maybe he never hits like 280. Maybe he's more of a 260 hitter, sure. But this is a potential 30-plus homer bat, middle of the order force. I would love to see him get traded. Like, I hate the landing spot, but like, I could see like Seattle and Baltimore lining up. Baltimore would have to probably add to get like, you know, a Brian Wu or something like that. But I know they wanted to improve the rotation more than they did this offseason. So, who knows if that happens? Probably not at this point, but you never know. I mean, or this Mountcastle in a smaller move. Who knows? But yeah, unless there's a move, you know, involving Mayo or opening up one of Mayo's spots that he could play, corner infield spot or DH, yeah, it's hard to see him really factoring in this year and probably just going to beast out down there in AAA. Him and Bisayo and maybe even Kjerstad. I don't know if they want to put Kjerstad on the bench or put him back in AAA. Who knows? That could be a really good lineup once again down there in Norfolk. But all right, let's shift over to my Boston Red Sox here. I mean, three really big names that we're going to see at some point this year. Obviously, two earlier than others. Marcelo Myers, probably more midseason, I feel. I mean, obviously, he had the injury end of last year, so didn't even get any time in AAA after he got promoted. But Anthony Campbell on the cusp. I mean, I tweeted out the other day, Chris, like, each day that goes by without the Red Sox signing that right-handed bat, specifically an infielder, is one day closer to Christian Campbell maybe even breaking camp with the team. I mean, I still would put it at like maybe 40% he breaks camp, but regardless, like, he's going to be up super early. I drafted him in the Nerf draft yesterday, which is why we're recording a day late, as I was down there in Boston to get back till 10 p.m. I drafted him, and I forget where it was. I jumped ADP on him, so I do think he's up early. If it's not opening day, very early, and getting that type of production from second base, which is very kind of meh pretty quickly this year in redraft. So I'm definitely all for getting some Christian Campbell. I think he's outperform his ADP. Anthony absolutely could too. I'm not 100% sure when he gets called up. It should be, you know, before Marcelo Meyer. I'm fairly confident in saying that. But right now, outfield is Jaron Duran. It's Willier Abreu and Rafael, who provides so much defensive value. So it's kind of hard to see where Anthony fits in. But I don't know. Would you look at are you targeting Campbell in redraft? And when do you think we do see Roman Anthony?
Yeah, I think Campbell's the most realistic to break camp with the Red Sox. They've already openly said he's going to get every chance to break camp and be the team's everyday second baseman. So right now, I mean, if we're just being honest, he's better than any other option on the roster.
Yep.
Meanwhile, with Anthony, it's just we know it's a little more crowded situation. So it makes it a bit tougher when we look at, you know, Anthony and how does he fit in the puzzle. Obviously, the bat's good enough to work his way into the lineup. So I'm kind of thinking like an early June call-up for Roman Anthony, which still has value. So you could draft him if you're willing to stash him for a couple months. He could also force his way in sooner than later. I mean, just we know how potent that bat can be. So if he starts out hot in AAA, then, you know, he could put himself in that conversation real quick. So as you said, though, like second base is the open spot. So that's the most logical way for, you know, him to find a way in the lineup. And Campbell's probably the guy that gets in the quickest.
Yeah, no, 100%. Yeah, I would say, again, I'm on a fence about opening day, but definitely opening day or April. I mean, if it's not by mid-May at the latest, I'd be absolutely shocked. Anthony a bit behind that. And then what do you think for Meyer? Quick ETA Meyer. If you had to pick a month he debuts in, I'm going to say July.
September.
You think it's September?
Yeah, I mean, where's he going to – unless Story's
– Yeah, that's hurt. The thing. It very much hinges on Trevor Story for sure.
Yeah. I think Meyer gets a cup of coffee and he's prospect eligible heading into 2026.
Yeah, no, I could totally see that. If Story stays healthy, and that's a big if, yeah, I mean, unless everything goes wrong, like Campbell doesn't hit, you know, and you know, David Hamilton can't provide value or Vaughn Grissom doesn't work out, I could see a path to being earlier. But, yeah, I think he gets more time in AAA than the majors this season for sure. So second half call up for Marcelo Meyer. Anyone else here you wanted to hit on, Chris, with the Red Sox before we move on?
I think that probably covers all the relevant ones. You know, obviously they traded away Teal, so he's not in the picture anymore. Richard Fitz is kind of interesting. I think he could find some more starts, and he was pretty solid. So at least that's a name to know. Like if you're in like the last round of a NFBC draft and hold 50 round league, that's at least stash the name. Like, yeah, he could come up. Hunter Dobbins also come up and get some starts. So Fitz or Dobbins, but yeah, not a ton to know outside of those big two, I think.
Yeah, I think this rotation, well, it's better. I mean, obviously it's shaky, you know, with a lot of these guys with durability, you know, Giolito, Buehler, et cetera. So I don't know. I could easily see Fitz, you know, getting some starts there, or Dobbins. I like Fitz too. Like, I saw him completely just shove in Double A a couple years ago when he was with the Yankees, and like six innings, two hits, like one walk, 10 strikeouts, 11 strikeouts, whatever it was. So it's kind of really been a fan of his ever since then. So, all right, but you know, speaking of Kyle Teal, move on to the other Sox team here, and the team that Kyle Teal is now a member of, the Chicago White Sox. I mean, that MLB everything besides Luis Robert is absolutely atrocious. Though I do like Sean Burke a little bit this year. I actually got him yesterday late in the NERF draft. But you know, the fun part is that you could see a lot of their top guys this year. I mean, we could spend 20 minutes on this team with all the guys that could debut this year, but we'll try to keep it somewhat concise here. I mean, who do you think's up first? I mean, probably, I mean, outside of like, you know, maybe Chase Myndroth, who could be, you know, even opening day. Sean Burke will be in the opening day rotation as well. I mean, probably you see Colson Montgomery pretty early. Drew Thorpe's up there, if not in the rotation opening day, he's up there pretty early as well. Teal probably more midseason. You know, Schultz, I think people think Schultz is gonna be up early. I don't see it, Chris. I don't know if you do. I do think they take the kid gloves off a little bit with Schultz this year, but not enough to have him, you know, in the majors by, you know, the All-Star break. I think he's maybe a cup of coffee in September and more so a 2026 impact. But I don't know. A lot of names here. You know, what are some guys you like at this White Sox team this year?
Yes, you're right. It's a lot of names for sure. Schultz, I don't think you're gonna get much impact from. In 2025, he hasn't thrown more than four innings in a start ever. Right. So could that change? Yes, but yeah, I'm not drafting Noah Schultz. You look at like a Braden Montgomery, no. Hagen Smith, no. Kyle Teal could be early. I'd bet more June. I think Colson Montgomery could be the opening day shortstop, so that's obviously somebody to know. Everybody knows Colson Montgomery at this point. I think people are low on him at this point for various reasons, but I think what he showed in the AFL, getting back healthy, his hand healed up. You know, I think that Colson's going to be really solid, and he still put up good numbers in AAA last year. Edgar Caro, you know, him and Teal, how do they sort that out? That will be pretty interesting. I think Brian Ramos is a name to watch. Third baseman, again, this infield's wide open. Brian Ramos has some pretty solid power in the profile, decent OBP skills. Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked to see him up. Obviously, Sean Burke as well. So, yeah, I think that you look at those names, and those are the ones that interest me the most. Obviously, Shane Smith that they took in the Rule 5 draft a little bit deeper down. Has he fit in this picture? Well, I think he's going to spend time in the bullpen and starting. He could get some saves. Wouldn't be shocked. And he also could get some starts. So there could be some value with Shane Smith in a pretty deep league, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, I'll mention, you know, again, Chase Meidroth, who I know I've never been like a big fan of Meidroth, but he's probably going to play this year, you know, a good amount with the White Sox. And it's almost like if you want, you know, I'm not making a direct comp, like a Jacob Wilson type that's cheaper than Jacob Wilson. I mean, I don't think he gets for the same average as Wilson, but I could say there's like a smidge, smallest little smidge you ever did see, a bit more upside in the power to speed department. But not much. And he's always been an elite OBP guy. I mean, the guy walks more than he strikes out, you know, over, you know, 400 OBP for the most part, or at least upper 300s in the minor leagues, basically everywhere he went. So I can see him having some sneaky value this year. Again, don't go crazy as the upside is limited. But, you know, Sean Burke's another one I just want to touch on super quick here. Got 3 starts and 1 relief appearance with the White Sox last year. 1.42 ERA in 19 innings with 22 strikeouts. Always been a good, you know, source of strikeouts and career minor league strikeout rate around 29%. It was 28.9% in that small sample size with the White Sox last year. Your whiff rate was above 40% on the slider and the changeup, though he doesn't use the changeup nearly as much. That's running about 6% usage rate and only to lefties. But, I mean, there's like a late round, you know, pitcher with some, a little bit of upside. I like Berg. I mean, again, the K's have always been there. He's always been a high strikeout guy. So I can see taking a late round flyer on him. I already have him myself. So, but yeah, a lot of names here. I think Montgomery's up early. I mean, I don't think he's going to be a stud, but I think he's going to be a solid bat. And I would kind of take last year's numbers with a grain of salt. But I think, yeah, he's up fairly early, like Chris mentioned, maybe even on opening day. Never been a big Thorpe guy. I think he's fine for depth, but you know, I don't think you ever see a big impact from him. The fastball is just not good. Everything else about the changeup is just not great. So, yeah, T.O. midseason. Yeah, don't think we see Schultz super early. Maybe we see Cairo at some point. And I don't know. Jairo Arrieta is going to factor in somehow. I just don't know if it's going to be starting, bullpen. Who knows there? But, yeah, a lot of names this year that are going to be up at some point for the White Sox. Now, let's shift over to the Cleveland Guardians here. I mean, I think, you know, the big name that's going to be up fairly early, you know, Chase DeLauder. I mean, we've mentioned it in other podcasts, Chris. Like, you know, I know you mentioned, like, you know, kind of like not wanting to waste the bullets there with him. Obviously, incredibly talented, and we've seen that. Metrics are all back him up. You know, contact was super high. Approach has been great. Power speed is there, but obviously the injuries are a major red flag. I mean, how many, you know, let's put the over-under, if I said the over-under for plate appearances for DeLauder being, you know, let's say like 475 this year, what would you say for DeLauder?
Probably the under. We haven't seen him play enough to actually believe that that's a real possibility. Like I said, I think that we've said it multiple times. It's not the Cleveland way, but they can't keep wasting this guy in the minors if he's healthy. With a good spring, they were talking about him on the opening day roster last year out of spring training.
Yep.
So they're, in my mind, like that's saying like, all right, DeLauder has a good spring. He's going to be in the opening day lineup. Question is, can he stay healthy all year? I'm not sure that he can until he proves me otherwise, but I am buying DeLauder for sure at his price. I think the price tag in redraft is good enough to take a shot on because there's a really good field to hit, good plate discipline, power, and speed. So I'm certainly in at the price tag. I think it's worth a shot.
I probably should have reworded my question. So it's more so like, you think he's going to be up early, maybe an opening day. It's more so like, does he stay on the field after that?
Yeah, I don't know. That's the tough question.
I took DeLauder late in Nerf last night. I think like 30, Nerf's a 30-round draft, so I took him 29th round, like pick 4 something. Maybe he's a round too earlier than that. It was one of the last few rounds, but I do think he's up, you know, early. If not opening day, I think he beasts out in AAA for a few weeks. Brennan struggles, and he takes over in right field or something like that. Or there's an injury. Or Manzardo doesn't hit well in spring training, and they want to, you know, maybe throw DeLauder at DH. I think there's a few different paths there. So everyone knows I'm insanely high on Chase the Lauder. Just wish the two could stay healthy. You know, another name here, Chris, maybe some sneaky value, Juan Brito. You know, maybe the, you know, actually Ross Roosters has him penciled in as the opening day second baseman, along with Brian Rocchio in that middle infield there. You know, do you see any value for Brito this season?
Yeah, I like Brito a lot. He's a major sleeper at second base. Just talked about him earlier today in the Dynasty second base write-up. I mean, he is going to play. Like, they've established he's going to be their second baseman at this point with Andrés Giménez out. Brito's not flashy, but he's steadily improved. You know, he had 18 home runs last year. The EVs are, they're not flashy. They're around average. The contact skills are good. He started out the year pretty slow. I know if you look at the surface, it's like not great. But while he started out the year pretty slow, he got going and was really good for like the final 5 months. Like, it was a pat first month. But after that, really, really good. I think Brito does provide value in a deeper context. I mean, like I said, it's not going to be a ton of home runs. It's not going to be a ton of steals. Not going to be the best average, but there's plate appearances there.
Yep.
There's going to be home runs there. There's going to be runs and RBI opportunity. So I think Brito is a pretty solid buy for fantasy purposes and redraft just because he's going to play and plate appearances matter a ton. So, yeah, I think Brito's the other guy to look at in this system and say, like, he could really contribute this year.
I mean, with how poor the second base position is, especially after, like, the top, like, eight or nine names or so, it wouldn't surprise you if we look at end of the year, Brito's like, you know, finishes like the 18th best second baseman or something like that, like a top 20, back end top 20 value. I could absolutely see that for sure. Outside of those names, I mean, you know, we're not gonna see Cheerio this year or Francisca. Maybe, you know, we probably see Jonathan Rodriguez again. There's still some power there, so I don't know if he, you know, hits enough and if he gets another shot, I mean, or extended shot, as to say, especially if once Delauder's up and in the lineup. I mean, just another spot that Rodriguez can't slot into. So I still like Rodriguez's power, but I just don't know where he fits into this team long term. Over to the Detroit Tigers here. Obviously, the biggest name here that, you know, maybe, I mean, I think was definitely going to be in the rotation to start the season. Now, I mean, I still think he's going to, but I could, I don't know. I said earlier I couldn't see him starting in AAA, but the more I think about it, I think I wouldn't be totally shocked if Jackson Jobe started in AAA, given they just re-signed Jack Flaherty. They already signed Alex Cobb, you know, back in December. You know, Casey Mize is still in the picture there. You know, Brent Herter, too. They have names if they want to slow roll Jobe a bit. I don't know. When do you think we see Jobe, and, you know, how many innings do you think we see from Jobe this year in the majors?
Yeah, I mean, I have a hard time believing they bring him up down the stretch last year, not to want him starting out of the gate.
Yeah, that's kind of been my thought, yeah.
I know you could say there's been wrinkles thrown in there, but the reality is, like, I think he's their fifth starter out of the gate. There's no reason not to. Also, another player that's dealt with injuries has not been on the field consistently. Like, don't waste your bullets with this kind of talented arm. I mean, Casey Mize, like, let's be honest. Casey Mize is not going to start for this team. I just don't see it. I think Casey Mize's time is up. Yeah, Matt Manning, I mean, you've got Sawyer Gibson Long. He had TJ, hadn't seen him pitch in a year. There's options, as you mentioned, but Jobe is their best bet. Jobe is better than, if Jobe's their five, he's much better than the five. I mean, talk about a pretty dominant trio at the top with Skubal, Flaherty, and Jobe. That's phenomenal. So I certainly believe that Jobe is still going to be in the rotation from day one as things stand. Maybe that changes in the spring, but I also think that he could give you 120 innings. Wouldn't be surprised. I mean, he gave you 91 last year in the minors, added four more in the majors. Maybe they slow play him a little bit. Maybe he's on the opening day roster and he's kind of a long relief kind of bulk option where he's going like 3 to 4 to start and builds up, because this is a team that's planning to contend. Like,
yeah.
I mean, there's no doubt that they're going to try to be a contender, but I still believe that he gets a rotation spot. Like, that's my read on it, that he's going to be in their rotation from day one.
Yeah, that's still where I'm leaning to. Like I said, I won't be 100% shocked that they decided to put him in AAA, but regardless, I'm thinking like 125, 130 innings, somewhere in that range feels about right for Jobe. And I think they could be very good innings. I mean, last time I checked, I think his ADP was like in the late 200s. So, like, I'm all over that. I know I'm not the only one that's all over that, though, which is the issue. But, yeah, absolutely. love Job this year. Could be, you know, the top rookie arm for 2025, especially with Painter not debuting until sometime around midseason at this point. Outside of Job, got a trio of, you know, bats here. We got Trey Sweeney, Jace Young, and Dylan Dingler. I don't really have any interest in Jace Young. I'm kind of soured on him. Not that I was ever high on him to begin with. Dingler, actually, I think is like a decent, like, third catcher in like a DC format. So I think he's going to play, and there's some power there. Man, I don't think Jake Rogers holds that spot the entire year. So third, fourth catcher, Dylan Dingler in a DC. I like it. But Trey Sweeney, I think, is a sneaky good value. His ADP is like 450 or so. I mean, as of now, they absolutely could, you know, there's still room to be in on Bregman. So that could really change this picture. But as of now, Sweeney's probably the guy at shortstop. You know, maybe Baez eats a little bit into it, but I don't think that much, though. I think they're going with their young guys. I think they're going with the guys that give them the best chance to win, and they know Baez is not that. So I see 500-plus plate appearances for Sweeney. Maybe he's only 240 or something like that, but he's always shown a pretty solid power-speed blend in the minors. I think you can see like 15-15, something like that. If he does get 500, you know, plate appearances, and maybe he won't be a ton of runs and RBI hitting in the bottom of that order, but again, pick 450-ish. I love that. I think it's he's a great like late round flyer. He's always been a little bit underrated because he's in the Yankee system. Bigger names overshadowed him, like Jason went to the Dodgers. Obviously, was overshadowed there by other names. So always kind of flew under the radar. But I like Sweeney to provide some sneaky value this year. But what are your thoughts on these three hitters?
Yeah, I mean, Sweeney's interesting because I think that we know he's going to play as things stand. This is a team that's still pursuing Alex Bregman right now to be their third baseman, which then throws Jace Young for a loop. Like, he's completely out at this point. You know, Glaber's going to play second. Colt Keith's going to play first. So that could change really fast for Jace Young. I'm not interested in him. Sweeney's a good, deeper target. And Dylan Dingler, too, I think is a pretty underrated catcher. I think he could beat out Jake Rogers over time. Though Jake Rogers has put up some pretty decent seasons the last few years, the last 2 years being 2.6 and 2.2 WAR, it's pretty solid. He brings good defensive value. Dingler brings a good bat. So I think there is some interest there from that standpoint. But, yeah, I think Sweeney's probably my most interested there. Young probably the least interested in.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, outside of that, I mean, maybe we see Jaden Hamm, Jake Miller, Ty Madden, that. I don't think there's going to be much impact there, though, this year. And I don't think we see, you know, Clark, McGonagall, Persino, none of those guys, I think, debut this year. So, I don't know. Anybody else you wanted to add into the mix here for Detroit?
No. I think that we don't see Clark or McGonagall. Like, if we do, it's because they had awesome years and they got a cup of coffee. Don't think we see Thyron Lorenzo or Josue Briseño. Bryce Rayner, no. Jaden Hamm, no. Yeah, I don't really see much more 2025 relevance here.
It's a good system, though. It's actually a really good system there in Detroit. All right, next up, Houston Astros. I mean, there's a lot of names on the cusp of, you know, that are in the upper minors, whether it's AA or AAA last year, some that have already gotten a cup of coffee. Kind of going to wonder where they all fit in, though. I mean, the outfield for Houston currently projects to be Chaz McCormick, Jake Myers, and Taylor Trammell, who just keeps popping up randomly in places. You think Trammell is gone? Also, like, oh look, he's you know, with this team now. But you know, I mean, I don't think we see Cam Smith this year. If we do, I think it's super late. I think he's more 2026 impact. But we could see, you know, some variation or combination of, you know, get Jacob Melton, Shea Whitcomb, Zach DeCenzo might be getting some reps in the outfield. I heard, you know, maybe not Bryce Matthews, but you know, Pedro Leon still chilling in the upper minors. So. Any of these guys intrigue you for redraft leagues this year, Chris?
I mean, I think Melton should be an obvious draft candidate. I mean, the power and speed blend, he's got good contact skills. He's a good glove. The outfield's terrible. I mean, honestly, that trio might be one of the worst outfields in baseball, which is crazy. I mean, that's probably a little dramatic to say. But
no, I don't think it is.
You
I
get the point, right?
I mean, I think McCormick could have a little bit of a bounce back, but, like, I don't know, Myers, yeah. Trammell, I don't know.
Yeah.
Don't see a lot of it's not a fun outfield by any means.
No. And Melton's ready. He's 24. Like, he's been in AAA. He's advanced. He struggled with injuries at times. But I think Jacob Melton could be in the opening day lineup, and I wouldn't be surprised if he had a good spring. Also could see him a couple months down and then come up. But I think Melton's by far the most relevant here. That infield's good. It's crowded. The outfield, not so much. None of the pitching prospects are, like, ready, in my opinion, to pitch in the majors. So while the system does have some sneaky names, I know it's pretty shallow, most people think, but there are some sneaky names further down. Like, the top guys you look and, like, Smith, yeah, I don't think he debuts. Jacob Melton, absolutely. Bryce Matthews, maybe it's a later season call-up. But, again, where does he fit into the puzzle? Because they've got that infield pretty locked up right now.
Yeah, it's like Whitcomb, I thought, could have gotten some run at third base, but now that they got Isak Paredes and they're still in talks with Bregman, though, it's like I feel like those have stalled a little bit. But yeah, I don't think he can move to the outfield, though. He could put, maybe fits into a super utility role at some point, or he can get a shot if there's an injury. But yeah, I think Melton is the one that could come up and play in this outfield pretty early in the season. Next up here, the Kansas City Royals, who I think overall have a very underwhelming farm system here. This is probably the quickest team in this episode, Chris. I mean, we're probably going to see Noah Cameron at some point this year. Maybe we see Gavin Cross. I mean, Jack Hagelin obviously is the gem of this system by a mile and a half. I don't think we see Jack a ton this year, maybe later in the season, but I think we see less of him than we do of Nick Kurtz. So I don't know. Not a lot of intrigue at least for this year for me in the system. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, Noah Cameron's definitely the star here. Cameron's vastly underrated, and he's a really good arm. Gives him a nice left-handed presence in that rotation that could certainly use a jolt. I mean, I know they've got six names listed on roster resource, but I mean, how many of them are good names? I mean, Cole Reagans is good. Seth Lugo's good. Michael Wacha has been good. I don't know if I trust Chris Bubich yet in a rotation spot. We'll see.
I don't.
Don't know I trust Lorenzen and Alec Marsh. So I think Cameron could come in and grab that spot. I think Jack Caglione is going to get more reps than people think. I mean, they invited him to spring training. I know that means very minimal. But you look, and I think that obviously you see Vinny Pasquantino's got first base locked down. But I do think and believe there's a way that they can coexist in this lineup by using the designated hitter spot. India on roster resources penciled in designated hitter. Michael Massey at second. There's also talk of India in the outfield. I think India's going to play more second base than Massey does. Don't really believe that sticks. So I think there's opportunity for Cags. But is it 100 plate appearances? Is it 250? I'm probably throwing the over-under on like 140.
That's fair.
And
yep.
I wouldn't be shocked if he went over. Like, I think it's possible, but again, it's the Royals. I'm not sure we've seen them be aggressive. Also, they haven't really had a prospect like of this level since Bobby Witt Jr. So we'll see how they handle Cags. I'm just not sure. But if he's hitting, it's going to be hard to keep him down, I'd say.
Yeah, no, for sure. But this next team is aggressive. One of the more aggressive teams, maybe the most aggressive team in baseball, with the Los Angeles Angels. I mean, obviously, Christian Moore, people were wondering when he's going to be up. Surprised he hasn't been up yet. Some people love to make that joke. But, I mean, I tweeted out the other day, like, I think it would be a major disservice to him to bring him up, like, early. I think he's up. And I'm not saying he shouldn't be up at some point this year. But if he's opening day or, like, April, May, I think it's just, like, just really bad for his long-term development. I mean, he's definitely a fun bat. Don't get me wrong. But I still think there's some things he needs to work on. I'd love to see him just get, at least half a season, start him at AA, a month or two there, another month or two in AAA, and bring him up in like August or something like that. That I'd be okay with, and I think he could have an impact down the stretch, the last month and a half, 2 months of the season or so. But I think it'd be bad for them to bring him up early on. But I don't know. That's not a knock on the bat. It's more it could be an impactful bat from second base, but I don't know. When do you think we see Christian Moore?
I mean, it could be opening day. Could be a little later down the stretch. I mean, it's the Angels, so it's hard to say. I will say I think Moore does need more work, if I'm being honest. Like, I wouldn't be shocked at all if, he came up and struggled. I mean, there are concerns against quality breaking balls. So, throw that out there. Yeah, he can get the ball hard. There's some fun power. I think Moore could be a 30 home run second baseman, which makes him pretty interesting. But I'm not sure it happens right away. maybe they just want to bring him up and let him get his feet wet in the majors, struggle a bit, and then eventually get going. That's a possibility too. I think that 400 plate appearances is a real possibility here. I'll say that. So I think Moore might be worth a shot. I think projections have him around 250. I definitely bank the over there, just given how the Angels roll with things. So, yeah, I mean, they've got the pitchers, too. They've got Caden Dana. They've got George Klaassen. They've got Sam Altagiri. We know Dana and Altagiri have debuted. So both those guys, you know, could certainly factor in. Klaassen could factor in as well. I wouldn't be shocked to see Chris Cortez, A&M arm who they drafted last year.
Yeah.
He was a reliever, but they are developing as a starter, at least were. Yeah, he could be in that bullpen pretty quick and maybe be one of the better arms in the bullpen. So Chris Cortez is a name to watch out for, just given that we've seen arms like this come up and make an impact in bullpens pretty quick, especially for a college arm that's pretty advanced.
Yeah, I think I like Dana a lot. I think he makes 20-plus starts in the majors this year. I mean, I've really warmed up to Dana. I never was low on Dana, but I'm not, like, super high on him. But I like Caden Dana, I'll say that. I mean, he had, you know, really good results last year in AA, 252 ERA in 23 starts. I mean, improved the walk rate. You know, he had a really good strikeout to walk ratio. I think he's, you know, he just screams, like, good number three starter to me. I don't think he's ever be a frontline guy, but I think you get 20-plus starts out of him, probably decent ratios, you know, above average K rate, something like that this year. Because, you know, that rotation, I mean, it's full. But, like, do we trust Yusei Kikuchi, Jose Soriano, Tyler Anderson, Kyle Hendricks, and Reed Detmers to all stay healthy and be good the entire year? I certainly do not. Especially that the last, see, Detmers, I mean, I've lost faith in Detmers. He's fine, but I've lost faith in him. Hendricks is, you know, in the twilight of his career. Tyler Anderson is just not that good. So, and really, Soriano's not great. I mean, Kikuchi had a good end of the year, but we've seen him, you know, not be the most durable arm either. So I think Dana gets plenty of run there for sure. Let's see, who's next up here? We go over to the Minnesota Twins. I mean, really good farm system overall. I just don't know. I don't think we see Walker Jenkins this year. I mean, Zebby Matthews got to get some more run this year in that rotation at some point. Maybe it's on an opening day. I still like Zebby. Luke Kuechel is coming back from, was Kuechel's Tommy John or was his the internal brace?
TJ.
Okay,
yeah.
I can't remember if he had Tommy John or that new, you know, fun internal brace, which is popping up more and more. So they're probably the bigger names here. I mean, maybe you see, like, I don't know, Andrew Morris. Maybe you see Peyton Ellis. Yeah. I don't know. Not probably a lot, but I don't know. What do you think about Erod, though? I mean, Rodriguez is, I think, the biggest name that could debut for them this year. But he got up to AAA a little bit last year for a cup of coffee. How much of him do you think we see this year with the Twins?
Yeah, it wouldn't be shocking if we saw a lot of them. Again, another person who's failed to stay healthy but has all the talent in the world. Manuel Rodriguez hits the cover off the ball. He's got an excellent eye at the plate. The contact skills are questionable, but it's a good athlete. I don't know. I mean, I could see him up in May. I wouldn't be shocked. I mean, we know the talent's there. I think that bat would play really well. And if he does, then he's a super value. Like, I want to get a couple shares of Emmanuel Rodriguez this year just to see where it goes. But yeah, it wouldn't be shocking to me at all if he spent half the year at least in Minnesota. Because another one where, why waste the bullets in the minors like Chase DeLauder with a guy who's been injured? We know he can handle pitching. We know he can mash the cover off the ball, and he's going to get on base at a high clip. I think they take their chances with Emmanuel Rodriguez this year and see where it goes. So I'm pretty fascinated by that development this spring. Certainly be something to watch out for. But yeah, I'm very excited about his potential in that lineup.
Yeah, because obviously there's a lot of guys in this lineup that have injury issues, and with how Willie Castro can play literally every position on the field, you can see, like, you know, Correa goes down, up Castro's at shortstop, that opens up DH. You know, Buxton obviously can go down at any point in time. I mean, Wallner and Larnach both, you know, provide value in their, you know, kind of strong set platoon roles. I like both of them, you know, a little bit this year. I mean, Royce Lewis could go down any minute. You know, a lot of different paths where, you know, that could open up a spot somehow with Castro moving around. to fill one of those spots, and then that opening up a spot for Rodriguez. He's one where I think this year, if he, you know, or when he does come up, yeah, I still have questions about how much average he gets for, but obviously OBP monster, so he played an OBP league, a lot more value there, but probably, you know, lower average, 230, 240. But, you know, if he gets like 450, 500 plate appearances, you could see 20 plus home runs out of him this year. But like the other guys, a lot of the other guys I just mentioned, he has to stay healthy as well. And again, Dibby Matthews, yeah, he's not going to be in the opening day rotation, probably not. But as you got, obviously, Lopez, Ryan, Ober, like cemented in, and 4 or 5 is probably Woods, Richardson, and Chris Paddock. That's what's on roster resource, which I kind of agree with. But I do think Zebby gets another shot this year. And, you know, debut wasn't great, but I still like Zebby a good amount long-term. You getting any shares of Zebby this year, Chris?
Yeah, I don't know if he's in the rotation out of the gate, but I also wouldn't rule out a call-up fairly soon. So
yeah,
I like Zebby. It's a command specialist whose stuff ticked up last year. He's got to throw over the corner of the zone more and stop trying to live over the heart and just throw strikes. So he's got to be okay walking batters. I think that probably changes the dynamic if he says, okay, I'm okay with a 5% walk rate if I'm living on the edge more and getting more strikeouts. But he was too hittable just trying to throw too many strikes last year. But yeah, I do like Zebby a lot.
Absolutely, as do I. Next up, we got 5 more teams here. We got the New York Yankees next up. I mean, I think with the New York Yankees, you're looking at really 2 names this year, unless I'm completely just forgetting somebody. It's, you know, obviously Jason. I mean, he's top, you know, I think his ADP is like right around 150-ish right now, going a round or two on average behind Dylan Cruz. I think I like Jason a little bit more than Cruz this year, but I don't know, they're pretty, I'd be okay with either, you know, Dominguez or, you know, we'll talk Cruz next episode. But if Dominguez is like my outfield 2, I don't know if I love that, outfield 3. You know, if I have 2 good outfielders already, want to take an upside on my outfield 3, I'm fine with that. Obviously, the power-speed blend possibility in Yankee Stadium is very intriguing. And then Spencer Jones, I mean, probably gets a shot at some point this year, but we've talked about him. He might be the most talked about player on this podcast, or one of them over the last like year or two, given massive upside, but the massive contact and strikeout concerns. So how do you feel about the, you know, ADP around 150-ish for Jason? And do you think we get any fantasy impact from Jones this year?
Say no on Jones. There's nowhere for him to play.
Yeah,
Jason has got a spot out of spring training, so they've said he's going to be in the opening day lineup. I believe that, and I still believe in the talent. Many have faded him. I mean, but you're getting power, you're getting some speed, and his contact skills are way better than anybody's given him credit for. Really solid numbers there. I like Jason a bit. I think that, you know, the price tag is interesting. Like, there's certainly safer options around pick 150. But on the flip side, there's probably not as much upside around pick 150 as there is with Jason if all clicks. So, yeah, I like the potential there. He is definitely the one to look at in this system, obviously being one of the top prospects in the game. But they also have a couple more guys you mentioned, like Jones. Does he come up? Maybe, but does he actually contribute? I don't know. There's been talk about Chase Hampton, if he's healthy, pitching a decent amount this year. He missed substantial time last year with injury. Doesn't have a long track record in the minors, but I was pretty intrigued by the fact when I heard that they were at least considering Chase Hampton to get some major league starts this year if he's healthy. So he's a name to watch as he's a really solid, kind of high upside arm.
Yeah, I feel like an injury or two would need to happen for that, though. Though, I mean, there's a lot of injury risk in this rotation. I mean, but right now they've got 6 guys. I mean, I think Hampton definitely gets up there. I just don't know how many innings. I mean, you get injured to like Rodon again, or Clark Schmidt goes down, or Stroman, whatever. But yeah, I think he definitely gets up at some point. And there's still some intrigue there. I think he's a kind of a sneaky buy low in dynasty formats because he was trending up before the injury, but obviously that kind of halted that progress. But yeah, I like Jason. I do, though, because as the Red Sox fan in me, and I don't have any shares of Jason in dynasty, so it wouldn't affect me whatsoever. I would love, this will never happen, but they just like re-sign Alex Verdugo just for the hell of it, and just like have that start back up. Like, oh, is he going to block
Jason?
The Red Sox fan in me, like, selfishly wants a little bit of that. Just, that would be absolutely hilarious, and, you know, keep my mind off this Red Sox team and how frustrating it makes me. But let's keep it rolling here. Next up, after the Yankees, the Seattle Mariners. who, you know, have one of the better farm systems in all of baseball. I just don't know. You know, I think, we do this episode next year. I think it's going to be like a massive segment on Seattle. I mean, next year we could see we see Cole Young this year. Maybe we see Harry Ford this year. Locklear's already had time. But like next year we probably get Colt Emerson, Lazaro Montez, Michael Arroyo, Johnny Fermello. Like, this could be a really fun segment next year. You know, Celeste in the year after that. So a lot of their guys are in the younger, lower parts of the minor leagues. And so really, I think you look at Locklear, maybe Ford and Young. I mean, I still think Locklear is going to be a decent MLB bat. I mean, at least like an average MLB bat. I don't think it's going to be a standout. But I don't know how much time he gets this year. I mean, Luke Raley's been pretty good, and he's over at first base more often than not. You know, they still have Austin Shenton on that bench. I just don't know how much run Locklear gets, but I don't know. Any interest in Locklear, Ford, Cole Young, or anybody else in the Seattle system for this year, Chris?
Honestly, no. I just...
Short answer, no.
I don't see any opportunities. Yeah, I mean, that's the easy answer. I don't see it playing time which is interesting. It's fascinating because the lineup's not great right now. I think that if you want to talk Ryan Bliss, maybe, but they just brought back Jorge Polanco. So I don't know. It's all their top prospects are at least a year away in my opinion. So I'm not really interested in any prospect, at least in Seattle for 2025.
Right, they always give me a feel a little bit different, but similar to the Red Sox a year ago. It's let's just, we could upgrade this lineup and go out and make some moves, but let's just kind of stopgap it, fill it up, and wait for Colt Emerson, wait for Arroyo and all the Celeste and all these guys. So yeah, really fun system overall. They have seven or eight guys in my top 100 or something like that, but yeah, not a ton of fantasy impact this year, unless you like Ryan Bliss. I don't know. He's me. But all right, moving on here. We got three teams left, the 3T team, starting with the Tampa Bay Rays. I mean, Carson Williams is one I thought was going to get run this year. I think he still does, but the addition of Ha-Seong Kim, I mean, I think, he spent the entire year in Double-A last year. I think you see Williams, playing more time in Triple-A than the majors. And outside of him, I mean, Chandler Simpson, obviously, I think is going to be fun with that speed. I mean, Aiden Smith, Braden Taylor, Isaac, I don't think they, I don't think they debut, or if they do, it's probably late and not a huge impact. So for me, it's, we get Carson Williams late, could be a fun little power speed blend there. We get Chandler Simpson at some point this year, could be a 30-plus steal guy, even in a part-time role. I don't know. Where would you be comfortable drafting a guy like Chandler Simpson, though, Chris, given that speed upside, but when does he come up?
I don't know. The one-trick pony profile is just not for me. I know, and I understand Simpson's not a one-trick pony in the sense, he has elite contact rates, too. I get that, but it's 20-grade power. He can't really hit the ball out of the infield. Just kind of slap it around and beat it out and then hope you steal. It's such a weird profile for me to kind of figure out. Presently, the glove's not good. I know there's been some improvements there, but it's still not great. And so, he's not forcing his way into the lineup because of his glove, which, again, is a little bit of a concern there. How does he fit into this lineup? And can he actually hit enough against major league pitching for this to work? And I get that there's some spots in this outfield where Simpson could find his way in. I mean, right now, Roster Resource is projecting an outfield of Josh Lowe, Christopher Morel in left, which is interesting, and Johnny DeLuca in center. So, I mean, you certainly think that Simpson could be better than Morel out there. I don't know, but I'm not sure the bat's good enough to play without another skill. I like Simpson. The contact rates are elite. The speed's elite, but there's just zero impact. And presently, I'm not sure I believe in the glove enough to say he's going to be a big 2025 impact.
Yeah, I think the best case scenario you're looking at, which I think a lot of Simpson truthers are hoping for, is an outfield second half impact like Xavier Edwards gave you He was hitting for a good average and stealing a ton of bags. And I think that outcome is possible. It's, you know, probably a lower percent chance of that. But you get him for the speed. I mean, I got him in the FPAS rookie draft that we do, the 18 rookie draft. Just because, like, all right, this guy could just come up and steal me 20 bags and help, yeah, really help
me.
He
wins the league in steals.
Yeah, it really could really help me, in, you know, in that category. So I think it's really dependent on, like, what you need, what format you're in. I'm obviously redraft, like, 12-team, 15-team, you're not looking at them. You know, deeper, you know, like a DC, you know, 50-round draft and hold type format. I mean, I could take him in, like, I don't know where he'd be going in that. I'm assuming his ADP, probably the 35th round-ish, I guess. So not a bad target there, but, yeah, it's definitely a limited profile. I mean, not getting any power, you know, no RBI, stuff, you know, not a ton of that, so... Really just getting him for a speed and hopefully gives you a good average along the way, which he probably should. Like you mentioned, the contact skills are pretty elite with Simpson. But and then Williams, I like Williams a lot, but I think 2026 is more of his impact now, given the addition of Ha-Seong Kim, who probably plays at shortstop this year. Let's move over to the Texas Rangers here. He had a little bit of a down year in Texas last year. Obviously, you know, rookie standout. From 2023, Evan Carter went down with the back issue. And with Texas this year, you're looking at, I mean, the top guy, Walcott's probably, I highly doubt we see him this year. But you probably get Alejandro Rosario at some point later in the year. Maybe Alejandro Ozuna, maybe some Teodo. You know, maybe you see Jack Leiter again. I'm not a Jack Leiter guy. Everyone knows that. But I think the biggest impact for this team for a prospect this year, obviously, he's got to go to Kumar Rocker. I mean, they don't have him penciled in right now in roster resource, but if Rocker looks good this spring, I mean, this rotation is the epitome of not staying healthy. I mean, do you think any of these guys make 30 starts? Eovaldi, DeGrom, John Gray, Tyler Molly, or Cody Bradford? I would bank on no for all five. And Bradford's all right. I mean, he's shown a little bit of, you know, upside, but I think if Rocker performs well in spring training, he's got to get a spot. It'd probably be over Bradford. So I think Rocker gives you, I mean, 130 plus innings this year. And obviously, the track record is very, very short with Rocker, but very, very dominant as well. What was it, like a 53-5 K-minus walk rate last year in like 34 innings or something along those lines was just ridiculous. That slider is freaking filthy. I don't know. Rocker this year, you know, he could be one of the best rookie arms, Chris. You know, obviously with Bubba Chandler, with Joe Painter once he's up. Now, what do you think we get from Rocker this year, and are you targeting him?
100%. Like, I think Rocker is the best version of himself that we've ever seen right now, even dating back to when he was dominating at Vanderbilt. I think looking at the rotation, I don't see why Rocker can't get 120 innings or more. Hey, man, I might go even higher. Like, I think Rocker's in the rotation on opening day. We saw him come up last year. Hard to imagine they bring him up down the stretch last year to not start him in the bigs this year. And I think you're going to get really good results from Rocker as well. Good ratios, good strikeout numbers. Projections are all over him. Like, it's crazy how high these projection models are on a rookie arm. We don't typically see that.
Right.
But, yeah, I think that maybe you get 140 innings of mid-3 ZRA with 25-30% strikeout rate, I think that'll absolutely play. So, yeah, Rocker is definitely a target for me. You know, other guys that could debut, I guess, kind of tough. I mean, they have a bunch of arms, maybe, but I see all of them as late call-ups, if anything. Yeah. They've got Jack Leiter. They've got Justin Foscue. I mean, like, I don't know. I don't see much else. And this is I love the Rangers system. Very talented.
Agreed.
But for 2025, it's kind of just Rocker, I think.
Yeah, that's where I'm at too. I mean, that's right. I love Justin Foscue. Like the dude. I mean, he did get a cup of coffee last year. He had 15 games with the Rangers, but this guy is just gonna, I think, just be chilling in the upper minors for a long time. He's like the new Michael Busch.
Michael Busch, yep.
I mean, and he's not even. I don't think he's as good as Michael Busch is, but he's just gonna be, you know, producing well in the upper minors and just never really getting a shot at the major league level, given all the bats they already have in that infield, and he can't really play the outfield. I don't know if he ever has played the outfield, but yeah, I don't think we see Foscue for more than a cup of coffee, you know, this year again, unless there's an injury. But Yeah, Rocker, I don't know if I'll have any shares of him, though. I like Rocker a good bit. I just feel like he's got to go higher. There's always be somebody in every league I'm in that wants him a little bit more than I do, so I probably won't have any shares this year, not because I don't like him, but obviously the upside is absolutely there. You know, who do you think is the more impactful year this year, Jackson Jobe or Kumar Rocker?
I don't think it'd be crazy to say Kumar Rocker. I'm just a little more comfortable with the innings that he's going to throw, which is also crazy to say, considering he didn't throw that many last year. He threw, what, 50 between the minors and majors?
Something like that, yeah.
I don't know. I see a workhorse frame. He's had TJ behind him. Like, I think Rocker gets 20 more innings than Jobe and might be better. So we'll see. I love Jackson Jobe. I just think it's more of a 2025 thing than long-term. So I still prefer Jobe long-term, but yeah, Rocker for 2025, I think. Close, though.
Yeah, I think it's close. Yeah, definitely, you know, I like Jobe more long-term, but I think it's actually, yeah, really close. I don't have a strong lean either way for this upcoming year. And I do agree. I think we could see more innings from Rocker. I definitely think we could see that. All right, last team here before we close out the show, the Toronto Blue Jays. You know, not like any studs. This is not a great system, but there's some sneaky names in this system. I mean, Tiedemann out for, you know, the year or almost all of the year again, so obviously you can kind of cross him off. But we probably see Aroldis Martinez at some point this year, maybe some Alan Rodon. But one guy that could be in the opening day lineup, and I kind of like, you know, I think he's a sneaky good target in deeper formats. Will Wagner, I mean, not a flashy profile, but makes a lot of contact. He could be like a, you know, 14 to 15, 16 home run bat over a full year. Probably not going to provide you more than a rogue steal or two, but came up last year, hit 305 and 86 plate appearances. Actually had a 50% hard hit rate and a 9% barrel rate last year. Again, small sample size, but you know, more of a line drive hitter, doesn't really get the ball in the air consistently, but contact skills are good, doesn't strike out that much, doesn't walk much either for the most part. But I mean, I would be surprised if we saw like a, you know, every year there's like that little bit older guy. You know, it was Spencer Horwitz last year, it was David Schneider. I can see Wagner or like an Alan Rodon being that guy this year. So, you know, Aroldis probably is the more sexy or more upside play here, but I'm going to get a lot of Will Wagner in like DCs and best balls, that's for sure.
I think so. I think Wagner is consistent. I think he's a better points league play. He just, yep, he gets the ball hard, but he just hits it on the ground too often. He's not going to steal bases, but I do think the OBP is going to be pretty high with Will Wagner. You know, I think Alan Rodon is certainly somebody to target. He's a very athletic outfielder with a great feel to hit, good power, sneaky speed too. Like, Rodon can run over distance, especially. Or Elvis, what does he look like coming back? Like, post-steroid suspension, like, what does he look like? And I don't know. I struggle with Aroldis Martinez and what the profile is, because look how it hit Noelvi when he came back. Like, he was bad. And we know that Martinez has power. He's shown improved hit tool over the years. I don't know. I'm kind of questioning there. Josh Kasevich is somebody to watch. Kasevich is basically Jacob Wilson with no buzz. I mean, Kasevich actually hits the ball much harder than Jacob Wilson. He also chases about half the rate of Jacob Wilson with similar contact rates, but nobody really talks about him. He hits just the ball on the ground too much, which is an issue. I think he ran a ground ball rate around 50% last year at 49%, so pretty close there. He did hit 6 home runs, stole 13 bags. It's a boring profile, but if you want boring, I think Kasevich could find his way in the lineup, especially if Bo Bichette's traded, because he's a good glove. Like, Kasevich is a solid shortstop. I think the odds are that Bo is traded by the beginning of the regular season, at least what I've been told. I think they want him out. I think Bo wants out. So I wouldn't be shocked at all if Bo is traded over the next month or two, and suddenly there's a spotted shortstop for Josh Kasevich, who is really good. So I'd at least watch out for Kasevich. It's just a name to know on this team. Yeah, deeper, I don't really see too much else that I think would debut this year and be relevant. But yeah, I'd say Alan Rodon. I would say Aroldis Martinez and Josh Kasevich. Maybe Kendry Rojas, they want to push him, but I don't think he saw enough innings. I think they keep him down in the minors for most of the year, trying to build up those innings, but we'll see.
I can't wait for Bubba Shit to be traded to the Dodgers.
Right.
Move Mookie over to second. Kim's like a super utility guy or something stupid like that. I don't know. I don't know. The Braves could be a good fit. Obviously,
yeah, that would be a perfect partner.
I don't think anybody's going to be sad if Orlando Garcia is not starting the season at the shortstop position. But I mean, I could see, you know, give him back, you know, an arm or two out of all your arms you have. Yeah, I could see that. All right, that wraps up the American League. A lot of fun names, and we'll hit the National League in next episode on Friday. But until then, everyone take care.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. TNCs apply. Available in app only.